Hey everyone, this is Jan-Niklas and welcome to the Weekly Devs Brew. Today I'm sitting down with Josh Goldberg, a developer who's managed to turn open source contribution into a full-time career while becoming a crucial voice in the TypeScript ecosystem. From maintaining TypeScript ESLint to breathing new life into Yeoman and other similar tools. Particularly, the thing that I like the most about Josh is that he literally wrote the definitive guide to TypeScript. Great book, I can highly recommend reading it. And having that said, Josh, welcome. Very happy to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. What an intro.
I might be wrong with this, but if I remember correctly, you originally worked at Microsoft?
That's correct.
That's correct. So how do I say this nicely? I assume you made a lot more money working at Microsoft than you do with open source.
You know, normally when someone starts with Microsoft and then, how do I say this nicely, it goes a little bit of a different direction than that. It's nice to go the financial compensation route. Yeah, that is accurate.
I mean, obviously it's not about financial. I mean, for financial aspects, you wouldn't go this route.
Yes. I am not going into open source for the money. I went into it because I love the work. I love being able to contribute to the web ecosystem. And it's some of the most fascinating, intellectually stimulating subject area I've ever seen.
So I personally would like struggle with this lack of structure, right? You're like completely in charge of your entire story yourself. Oh, today I'm going to work. So talk to me, how does your daily routine look like?
Sure. I try to give myself structure because, yes, I would be lost without it. I have year-long goals, the equivalence of a personal OKR, objectives and key results. There are a few projects that I'm in particular excited about for this current year. I break those goals down into how long, how many months I think each will take, and then I work within that. I also try to treat it like a 9-to-5, or in my case, because I wake up early, something like a 7-to-4. So it really doesn't feel very different from when I was at Microsoft or later at Codecademy. The main difference is I don't have a boss or manager or mentor. It's just me on the internet.
Okay. So that's honestly one thing that I really appreciate, the how transparent you are. Like if you go to Joshua's blog, which I'll put in the show notes as well, you can read literally everything about your, as you said, like your goals, your compensation aspect from like the last years. And that's one thing that I personally very appreciate because it helped me like help you in a way through JetBrains. So I just wanted to use this to say thanks for that, because I think it's obviously most developers know that full-time open source is not as luxurious as you might think it is. But it shares some insights on that that I otherwise wouldn't have. So thanks for that. So let's talk a little bit about your projects. I like to compare my open source project. Well, my open source projects are more like passion projects, side projects, right? So like, usually what happens when I work on those, it's like, oh, I get super excited about one thing, work on it for a couple times, and then get either sidetracked with something else or lose interest. So, A, the first thing I would be super interested in is, like, what is your passion project right now where, if you could, would spend, like, 100% of time?
That's a great question. I'm going to rudely sidestep it, and I'm sorry.
Go for it.
My big personal journey the last few years has been trying to separate out code as a hobby from code as work, or even more broadly, separate out work-life balance or balancing that stuff. I used to have these passion projects. That's how I got into open source. If I had my way, I would just work on full-screen Mario and full-screen Pokemon, my terrible ports of Nintendo games to modern browser tech and usability.
Nice.
But these days, because I'm doing open source as a full-time job, I need stuff other than that in my spare time. You can't spend all your waking hours working on something. That's how you lose your mind.
I can honestly just second that, because when I moved over here in the US, I was working crazy hours because corporate America. And that literally, open source was the first thing I dropped, because I was like, yeah, I'm looking like 10 hours at a screen or more writing code. I don't want to write code outside of that. So I got into gardening or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, but now I'm curious, like, what is your not work, your not code thing you're passionate about then?
Well, we just bought a house and moved to a new city, as you and I have talked about. That's a lot. Both of those are a lot of work trying to catch up.
So with you went like full-blown DIY. Can I see you like fixing electric under the basement, in the basement, or what kind of...
I've made a big Notion table of local contractors and auto shops and such. That's the current extent of my DIY. I did, though. I'm proud of this. I picked up... I bought a learn to juggle kit, and I can't say I can juggle yet, but I have been slowly learning the fundamentals of juggling, which is very rewarding and frustrating, much like coding.
That is cool. You have to show that to me at some point.
Once I can actually juggle 3 balls in the air, then I will show you and everyone else in the world. I'm going to be the most annoying person about it. I can't wait.
I think most people will be like, okay, this is cool.
You know who else does stuff like this? Phil Nash, also in the conference scene, yo-yos like really, really well. And it blew my mind where just out of nowhere, he pulled one out of his pocket, a nice yo-yo, and started doing all these tricks with it. I want to be that guy. I want to have that kind of like random, weird, random, unexpected hobby.
Yes. Yeah, so usually we from JetBrains, when we go to a booth, we have yo-yos. And at an AngularConf, Chao Tran, who's also on the Angular Plus show with me, he grabbed one of those and was starting like exactly how you said. I was like, that is so cool.
So cool.
Okay, but coming back to open source for a moment, just for a moment.
Sure.
How do you I get the aspect of OKRs. But how do you prioritize? Like, okay, today I work on TypeScript ESLint. Today I file a super cool proposal for TypeScript. We also need to talk about the Sigma thing, but that's a different thing. Today I'm going to revive Maka. How is that process?
It's a art, not a science. I like doing exciting things. A big part of why I'm here is because it allows me to go out and do whatever happens to interest me this day, week, month. So part of it is just, I'm bored of what I was doing. Let's go do something different. I use that kind of like ADHD energy to go and hyper-focus on something for a little bit. So oftentimes when there's a big proposal or project, it's just because I got bored of the last thing. And this is what I, for reasons no human could comprehend, now want to do. But I have kind of mapping back from... like the bigger objectives to my day to day. Like if for example, I'm working on Bingo right now, a project, and I need certain things in Bingo for my other project that relies on it. So I will be working on these consistently throughout the week.
So I know Bingo is one thing that you're very passionate about right now. Passionate in a career sense. Talk me through it a little bit, because I was like, from the landing page that you shared with me, I was not like fully grasping it. Like, what is Bingo? What need does it fulfill, or what itch does it scratch at the end of the day?
Yeah, this is a hard project to explain. If it was like a linter, I could compare it to other linters. People know what a linter is. But the closest equivalent to Bingo is Yeoman, which amusingly I'm now co-maintaining, but people haven't used, for the most part, Yeoman in web dev for a very long time. But the general idea is writing a repository template is an awful process, and it is not easy to do well.
Yes.
That problem breaks down into two areas. One is that the very act, the creating a template, there's no good tooling for that. We have low-level things like Mustache or Handlebars, little templating libraries. Mm-hmm. But being able to, you know, like have it be responsive as stuff updates, you know, like to what's in your package JSON. Or being able to have little blocks of tooling that can be individually toggled off and on. I have Vtest swapping out for Jest. They both impact package JSON. How do I mix and match? So first of all, Bingo gives you a really nice engine for setting up templates and then having systems in order to have more rich templates.
So I know you're not super like in the Angular scene, but is it somehow like the scaffolding capabilities of the Angular CLI where you can like ng-new create kind of like... So Angular, they differentiate between ng-new, ng-generate, and ng-update. Ng-new is like creating a new project where like the template is fairly static in that sense. And you generate are like small pieces of code, like components, for instance, or those kind of, or tests. And ng update is then, okay, you made a version jump. Here are the changes that we need to do. And there are like different mechanisms, like some are AST based, some are just like creating new files. Is it somewhat to that, just in a more generic, like outside of Angular context, or how can I, like a npm create, but like a little cooler, a lot cooler actually.
Yeah. Fun fact about create, that was the original name of this project because I got the create package name. Turns out npx create, which tells npm to fetch the latest version of the create package if it's not already locally and then run it, is confusingly similar to npm create, which is the built-in npm command to find the npm package with create dash something in its name and then run it. So I renamed it to Bingo to save everyone the confusion. But to actually answer your question, you can think of it, similar to the Angular ng scaffolding creating migrating. Mm-hmm. The difference is, and I think this is a really interesting philosophical reflection of Angular, Angular has its one way of doing things, which is quite good for the Angular way of doing things.
Debatable.
Well, looking from the outside, I'm quite envious of how much your ecosystem gets for free, you know, all these migrations, and I never shut up about how much I love your DI built-in version of control. But my way is better. No offense. My way has more features. My way is, because I've separated out from Angular, I don't have the dependencies or dependents that you do, you folks, royally speaking. I can do all these really cool, rich things. I can experiment and iterate. So yes, it is analogous, but it is a different philosophy or set of philosophies. And it has some features that are just fundamentally incompatible with the Angular way of doing things.
Okay. Why Bingo?
Two reasons. One, what a fun word. What I want people... See, this is actually a learning I got from linting. When you work in an area that people actively despise, you need to make it as fun and poppy as possible. That's part of why I put emojis everywhere and smile and ha ha ha. You know, like, you can either fall asleep or learn about linting. Those are, in an exciting way, those are your two options. Yeah. So similar here, no one really wants to think about, oh, scaffolding a new TypeScript repo, setting up lint and test and knip flows for you. That's not appealing to most developers. But if you put a fun name on it, like Bingo, that is, you know, a nice way to improve it for people as an experience.
This is like very marketing-y in a way, right?
Yeah.
Is that something you actively learned throughout your open source career? Is that something you were interested in before? Is that just a necessity to... For you, because like most people, when they, or most developers, particularly when they hear marketing, they're like, ugh.
Yeah. The first and the third, it is something I've actively learned, both in learning to appreciate why it's useful and necessary, and also learned how to do. And yeah, it is a necessity. I think when you say marketing, there's a big swath, a range of what that could refer to. I'm not trying to go out and like buy ads on Stack Overflow or whatnot, but what I do think is like really valuable and important for any project to do is to respect that people come in without initially knowing the project. And if you can't educate them in an approachable and friendly way, what the project is, if you don't make them feel welcome, they're going to bounce. They're going to leave. So Bingo, which is like a fun name and like a good expression of, aha, it works, is, I think, actually an important aspect to consider for the project.
On that note, I do have a question for you. How do you feel about like the silly face YouTube thumbnail marketing thing?
I'm conflicted. I'm not sure of my opinion yet. I've tried not to think about it too much because the whole area of DevRel influencers, it angers me, but there are also people I really like in it. Like you are someone who does produce content and who I like, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Shruti Kapoor is another example.
Yeah.
So I find it hard to criticize the negative aspects without accidentally criticizing the things that like you and Shruti and others do. I think it's good to make content approachable, and a lot of people will not consume content if it doesn't have that personal face.
Yes.
But I do see this trend in the industry of people prioritizing hot takes and emphasizing the like the BS emotional reaction, which you then see in the face reactions.
I 150% agree with that. I think at the end of the day, the silly face itself is just a means to make the video more approachable. In a way, it's like you also would put an iPhone in a fancy box. It's the same kind of thing. It looks nicer, the experience is better, and that just makes it more approachable. I think the content and then is more relevant. Like, okay, is this genuine how you feel about certain things, or is this having an opinion just to be for the sake of being different?
Yeah.
Okay, but sorry, that was a very, very big tangent. Coming back to Bingo. So I remember you have the Create TypeScript app repository. Are you trying to replace that with Bingo? Is that something that you want to use for? Like, is Bingo basically like a baseline for your Create TypeScript app? Or how do those fit into your OKRs?
Quick question. Yeah, and it's the latter. That Bingo is the foundation, the framework upon which Create TypeScript app, CTA, is built. Kind of like how you wouldn't replace your front-end app with React, but you would swap out a lot of what 10, 15 years ago you might have written as Vue, state management logic, and just use React for that.
Yeah.
Bingo came out of CTA, in fact. What happened with CTA versions 0.x and 1.x is I built a whole bunch of specific logic, you know, the generate ESLib config function, which takes in all these different options. Mm-hmm. And it was this horrible mess over time as I added more and more things to it. So as many developers inevitably do when they have a big project, they extract out some kind of framework or engine, which then became Bingo.
Interesting. Okay, but now I do have to ask that, because we now have Create TypeScript app, Bingo, and then you also now took over stewardship of Yeoman, which I remember very dearly, but I acknowledge that a lot of people that watch this video might not even have heard about it, because it's like I feel like 10 years ago it was like the hot stuff where like, oh, this is so nice, you can just scaffold an app or you can create components, and it was very like broadly supported in the ecosystem. Like, there were Angular support, there was Express, there was React was kind of like just on the verge at that point. So how
does that
A, how, and B, why?
Yeah, I will have a blog post on this eventually. It's just been me
famous last words.
Yeah. Why do I maintain old legacy projects? Why am I one of the three or four team members now of Mocha? Why am I one of the 2 to 3 members of Yeoman when these don't actually fit into my primary OKR around making web development easier and more powerful? It's because, three reasons. One, it is useful. There are people who use Yeoman. Like, the VS Code extension guide is an example. The J-Hipster company is another example that, there are still users of Yeoman. Mocha is dependent upon by ESLint, TypeScript, a whole bunch of packages.
Mocha is very big in the open source space still. I know RxJS also used it for quite a while. I'm not sure if they still use it, but yeah, it's very easy to set up and very convenient for those purposes.
Yeah. Also great theming. Mocha, JavaScript and all.
Yeah, I love it.
The second is that I find it really interesting and / get political, personal insights and benefits out of it. Like, it's really fun to go to a code base and won't fix 70% of the issues because they've aged away and are now out of scope for maintenance mode. Yeah. I like that.
But how does maintenance mode look for it? How does that look like? Are we talking about security issues? Are we talking making your life maintaining it a little bit easier by slapping TypeScript over it? Or what does it look like?
Depends on the project. Definitely security issues. That's probably the most important thing, to make sure that, users aren't about to get hacked because of a bad update. Making sure packages can be pushed to by the maintainers and not anyone else. But yeah, for Mocha, we are targeting quality of life features, things that bring it in line with modern standards. Yeoman to a lesser extent also, but honestly, the Yeoman ecosystem is much more fragmented and multi-package than Mocha's. It's really mostly getting them to not crash anymore.
Okay, just for my overview, and that's probably not an extensive list, but you have Bingo, you have TypeScript, ESLint, and I'm not saying you're the only one on all those, but that's sure. That's what you're working on, right? You have Yeoman, you have Mocha. Did I miss anything?
I'm probably on the ESLint team. I'm not a maintainer or TSC, right. Technical Steering Committee, but I'm on the committer team.
And this is how you started your journey into open source with TypeScript, ESLint kind of things? Or was there something before where you're like, that's the cool shit, and then just eventually ended up doing linting?
My first project that saw anyone looking at it other than me, really, was Full Screen Mario. It was aforementioned shenanigan. I didn't even mean to make it open source. I just liked how GitHub was easy, free code hosting. That was it.
Reasonable.
And then eventually I discovered the joy of other people sending me bug fixes. That was very nice. I got into linting because I posted Full Screen Mario online, or it got posted online as well, and people rightfully told me this code is trash. What are you doing? You need to use a linter. Formatters weren't yet popular in JS at the time. So that's how I got into linting. But what I really got, like the main projects I got started with were actually in the TSLint ecosystem, the TypeScript equivalent to ESLint that later got killed and replaced by TypeScript ESLint.
I'm a big fan of linting, but I feel like linting every so often goes through like these waves of like, oh, you shouldn't lint your code, it just makes you slower. Oh, you should actually lint in CI, but not local. So honestly, I think linting is probably a thing that I feel like the ecosystem is the most split on in a way. And some of the linting rules are also just very opinionated, so I think that's part of that. But what is your philosophy about linting? How do you look at it?
Yeah. What a big area.
Take your time.
Sweet. It's one of my favorite things. Yeah, I think linting is incredibly powerful and important. And if you disregard it because there are rules you don't like, you're holding it wrong. The point of a linter is that it's super customizable and it does what you want. And you can turn it off if it does stuff you don't want. Or you can turn individual rules or extensions plugins off. What really kills me is I see a lot of people, including some big names who know their stuff and get heard, say kind of immature statements like you should not lint or you should delete your ESLint config. Full stop, no context.
Yeah.
I think that's immature. I think that there are times, places, projects, people where that makes sense. There are plenty of people who do not benefit from ESLint. They know better, or their projects aren't the type that benefit from it, or no one else touches their code. But exactly. The bigger a project gets, the more people who work on it, the more useful these things are. And I don't think it's fair to prescriptively say you should or shouldn't use linting in such an abstract sense.
Okay, I feel like particularly over the last 2-3 years, linting got somewhat of a bad rep for being slow, which I personally never felt that pain because at the end it's running in a CI, and if that takes a minute longer, that's fine for me. There are other things in the CI pipeline that takes longer than linting. So how do you look at like the performance aspects of linting?
See, I have felt that pain, and I agree with people that linting today is oftentimes way too slow. Mm-hmm. Where I do differ from a lot of people is on the cause of that. A lot of people think that the reason why linting is slow is because ESLint is written in JavaScript, and if we switch to native speed linters, we will get significant performance improvements, which is true. That is part of it. But the real performance bottleneck in the vast majority of production uses of ESLint is from typed linting, because ESLint is not architected to support typed linting the way TypeScript ESLint does. A super majority of the time in most code bases I've seen that take more than a few seconds to lint are from often incorrect or even optimized versions of my lint config is supposed to use typed linting and TypeScript is slow.
But at the same time, you're also an advocate for saying use type-aware lint rules.
Yes. Because most of the time, of course, not all, but most of the time, it's worth it.
Okay. Yeah. I agree.
Typed linting is really powerful. And this is another thing that kills me, that people don't turn it on because it's too slow. And then they say linting is useless. They haven't investigated the useful lint rules. They don't. I'm very excited about TypeScript being ported to Go, 10x faster and so on. I'm also excited that the native speed linters like Biome, DinoLint, OXLint are all investigating or even starting to add typed lint rules. I think that that's a really good move for the industry.
Kind of want to bridge that gap because I love talking to you particularly about your TypeScript knowledge. Like every time when we chat about TypeScript, I feel like I leave with knowing more about TypeScript than I used to know before. So with everything you've seen, I mean, you worked on TypeScript ESLint, you worked on TSLint, you wrote a book, which I have nothing but respect for. I would never have enough passion to write a book. What is one thing that you see people do that you think is just plain wrong? Don't do this. and It's a little bit black and white. Obviously, like, software development is always more nuanced. Like, it depends, exists for a reason, but...
It depends, you know, why I am... What is it? Why MMV, your mileage may vary, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Don't block your local dev server on TypeScript type errors.
Yes.
It's inconvenient because oftentimes you will have type errors when you're just messing around locally. And B, it means that you have to wait for type checking to finish before you can have your local development, which is obscenely slow in especially larger use cases.
That honestly was one thing where I had like the biggest eye-opening moment because the Angular dev server used to do that in like former versions. And then I was working on a Vite project and I was like, this is so magical.
Yeah.
And like, because the way that I work at least is often like I hack something together just to make it work and then I iterate over it and make the code look nicer and like make it more maintainable and stuff. And for that purpose, it's just so good to like, obviously it needs to compile, but type errors and stuff doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah.
So yes, I fully agree. Is that still a thing that you see quite commonly?
Not as commonly.
Okay.
It's one of the nice things about staying in open source, trying to be in the, you know, the cultural zeitgeist or whatnot for a few mm-hmm. years is you see patterns come and go, and especially bad patterns like using a linter for formatting or blocking dev server builds on TypeScript type errors. Bad, you know, with like quotes and asterisks. They're the worse it is, the more likely it is that the community tries to stomp it out. So yeah, I think the community's gotten better at this and a lot of other unhappy things, which is a nice trend to see.
I do have to circle back to that because you now touched on that like two or three times with like the linters to formatting. Draw me a picture with words. What are we talking about here?
Sure. So there are three common forms of static analysis in the web world today. It's three common forms. Linting, formatting, type checking.
Mm-hmm.
Formatting doesn't change your logic and almost always does not change the AST, the representation of like literally what is in your code file. Formatting is like mm-hmm. indentation, white space, new lines.
Mm-hmm.
Linting is stylistic stuff like naming or whether you should use, you know, one code construct or another. Excuse me. And then light type checking is, you know, TypeScript, like you said number, but you gave string. Formatting is something that people used to use linters like ESLint for because, you know, you can write a lint rule to ensure indentation. That's fine. But what we've discovered is that linters are inherently structurally bad at formatting. Something like Prettier or dprint, which builds like a one-pass model where it just reads in your code into the AST and then poops back out the results onto the page of formatting it, are much faster and much, much cleaner.
So was that the reason why? Because I think with the latest major version of ESLint, this got separated for like compatibility reasons and like its own package for people that still use it. But it's not part of ESLint core. Was that like part of the reason or where's that coming from?
Yeah. ESLint, yes, as you said, used to have a lot of formatting rules and those are now split out. Anthony Fu over from the Vue ecosystem worlds was kind enough to take him on into his ESLint stylistic project. I think though that there's like a root, I don't agree with this mentality that I'm happy to see people slowly moving over towards over time, some people, which is that I want to spend as little time and energy as possible thinking about formatting and stylistic concerns. Why do I care about this? I'm not writing code to have clean code. I'm writing code to do something. So as much as we can automate that stuff, the better.
Yes.
So I don't want to use ESLint rules that allow me to concretely, definitively manipulate every little preference of formatting because I shouldn't be caring about that formatting in the first place. It's a waste of time.
Having that said, does that mean you're slap on Prettier and call it a day on your projects, or are you more in that sense like I don't care about formatting in general?
I think you should use Prettier. I definitely use Prettier or
okay.
an equivalent formatter.
Right, right.
It formats for you, so you can type whatever garbage you want, and it consistently formatted code is beautiful. It's easier to read. You don't have to worry or think about things. You don't have weird, unexpected changes from whitespace and PRs. Definitely use Prettier.
Okay. Because that's what I assumed, but I've also talked to some people that say, okay, the formatting of code provides meaning to it. So having something automating it takes away that meaning, which is a valid argument in a way, but I fully agree, particularly with like code bases where more than one person touches it, having something like Prettier where it's like ensures consistency so you know what to look for is great benefit. I have to circle back to TypeScript. I can just not talk to you and not talk about TypeScript, even though I like talking about linting with you because it's very inspiring in a way, like the way you look at it, but you just know so much about TypeScript. I have to. What is a TypeScript feature or pattern, doesn't really matter, that you think is criminally underused in today's ecosystem?
Typed linting?
Or overused. Or overused.
Oh, overused. I think, in general, type narrowing the feature is something that people, I wish they treated and considered to be like a foundational, you should really master this first thing, but tends to be relegated to advanced sections of guides.
Agree.
It's a really, really nice thing, though. And like properly using type narrowing lets you avoid so many of the confusing patterns, like on like as assertions that people put in code that really make it hard to read.
Okay, I still have to figure out what you think is overused. I know what I think is overused.
Well, what do you think is overused?
Enums. Well, it's not even overused. It just is a mistake from the start. Enums in itself should have never landed in TypeScript.
They're so useful, though. I would have devil's advocated you either way. But
okay. So why do you think enums are useful? What you can do with enums that you cannot do with other existing TypeScript primitives or patterns?
You can do all sorts of stuff with existing TypeScript stuff outside of enums. It's just inconvenient too, which is a factor.
A string literal types are very convenient.
They are, but they don't have as good find and replace or rename or go to definition as enums.
Very debatable. And we're now touching territories that I feel passionate about. We can talk about the shortcomings of the TypeScript language server, but that is a tooling issue, not a language issue.
agnostic of whatever language server or service you're using, if you use a TypeScript enum and you say, you know, fruit enum with apple equals apple, banana equals banana, cherry equals cherry, and you find all references on, let's say, banana, it will give you that. Whereas if you have just the string literals, you know, in a union, apple or banana or cherry, and you want to find all references on banana, conceptually that doesn't make sense. Because what if you have other literals that just so happen to also be banana?
So, again, we're touching on something we should probably not touch on, but there are tools out there in the ecosystem that differentiate between string literal types and just strings that happen to happen the same. And you can distinguish this. Just saying.
Sure.
But also you cannot use, you could use objects, an object notation for itself. It wouldn't generate the same amount of boilerplate that enums generate. And we could use const enums, but then we cannot use isolated module. So
this is something that should be solved in JavaScript at some point.
I agree with that. I would be happy, A, if it's compatible, because I don't want to have like another decorator mess.
It's not going to be compatible. I'm so sorry, Nicholas. Yeah. There's no way in heck.
and that's exactly what I'm thinking. But yes, I think I would be okay if the enums concept would land in JavaScript. Then I would be okay with having enums in TypeScript. But I'm very much against the idea of having a TypeScript-only feature that does not exist in a language.
I agree. I think that objectively right now, I try to avoid enums whenever possible because, much like decorators, we know there's something coming down the line. There is a proposal for enums, in large part championed by people on the TypeScript team. The problem is when TypeScript came out, it didn't have narrowing. It didn't have literal types or unions even.
That's
true. There was no good way at the time to do what is covered by enums.
But to be fair, at that time, also string enums were not existent. And number enums are just so, so useful. Like, I think we can agree on that too.
I don't know, man. TypeScript, really? TypeScript's code base heavily uses number enums and bitwise logic.
Okay, I can see that. But then they can use it internally. I don't care about that.
Yeah, just don't export it. Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, the fact that TypeScript is probably one of the biggest exemplars of enums and bitwise logic brings up the question of, well, is that something you should be writing in JavaScript code if you need to optimize so heavily for your memory management?
Well, or go.
Or go. Yeah.
Okay. I shared my opinion. And I mean, that's pretty known how I feel about enums at this point. I feel like every time I have the possibility to rant about enums, I'm very happy to. But coming back to you, what is your criminally overused TypeScript feature?
Unnecessary type annotations, probably.
Fair.
So I did this when I was new.
Yes. So am I reading between the lines that you are in the camp that prefers type inference when possible?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Same. Like from my perspective, I was like very much like, oh no, you should explicitly, it makes it easier to read and stuff. But like the minute you have like a code base that is like grown a little bit and you want to make changes, having type inference is so much nicer because you get to know immediately the places you have to change instead of just like diving through function by function. I like it a lot.
Yeah, for sure. TypeScript is really good these days in ways that it wasn't when it was first created. It can infer some beautiful types for you to the point where if you're writing explicit types, you will eventually just force TypeScript to be less powerful and reduce its knowledge of your code base, which is very counterproductive.
Very much agree. Is there a lint rule for this?
There is. It's not super powerful, though. It's hard to write a lint rule for
that. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, because sometimes people want a type intentionally to be wider, more general than the inferred type, and it's hard to know when people do or don't.
Yeah, that makes sense. You were just talking about like the TypeScript code base. I have seen proposals from you in the TypeScript code base explaining how pure functions should or could work for making signals more useful or like more ergonomic, basically. So, what is something if you were on the TypeScript team? I mean, you used to work for Microsoft, so it's not like out of the blue, that you would love working on.
You'll probably ask me for a more specific range, but the website and the documentation in general.
It's so bad.
It's better than it used to be, I will say. Sure. Their V2 of the website is really nice, but they have effectively feature frozen, mostly the current website. They just don't have the budget to work on it, which is important.
And I get that. I love how detailed they are with the release blog notes. Those are really, really helpful. But release blog posts are not docs.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, for example, the Learning TypeScript article that I wrote on branded types, I didn't want to write that article. Why is describing like this common, like, well, this known pattern and falling to some random person's book blog? Because there's a lot of stuff in TypeScript beyond the foundations that just does not have documentation in any first-party resource.
Funny enough, I did a conference talk and was mentioning branded types, and no one was like, no one approached me and was like, oh yeah, I've used that for years. That's dead obvious. Like everyone was like, you can do that?
Yeah.
And it's such a nice feature, particularly for type safety. Like the amount of issue or the amount of issues I had of like, oh, I handed in address ID instead of like the location ID into that function. They're both just strings. So yeah, branded types also probably one of the things where I would say it's kind of underused. People should use that more.
Yeah. I wish there was a good way to do them. In TypeScript itself, true. I don't think anyone's figured one out that's so good that the team would really feel excited about it.
That's my guess. A little hand rolled still, kind of like we used to have the in the switch block the assert unhandled case.
Oh yeah,
you probably did that too, where you had like a function that took never as an argument, and therefore when the control flow ended in that default block, you know, okay, you cannot pass an argument to never. But TypeScript was smart enough that if you had an exhaustive check, it would not go to that never block. But yeah, that got handled with compiler options, which I'm very happy for. But yeah, I would like to see something like branded types and kind of like you have utility types like record or something. You can handle roll it yourself, but having like a branded type would be nice.
I don't know. What I really want is a glossary. I want every term that people use, like discriminated union. What the hell does that mean? Is this a worried something? To have a place where we define what the term is, and then if we want to update the term, like if we figure out a less hair-raising term than discriminated union, we can update it in one place.
Yes, that is a really good one. A glossary would be nice. But some of those things are also really hard to Google for, like if you have like the exclamation mark for like non-null assertions, you see that exclamation mark in the code base, but you cannot Google for like what does exclamation mark mean in TypeScript.
Yeah, for sure.
No,
it's hard. That's actually, I mean, you know what, I don't like relying on AIs because for fundamental learning things because they get so much wrong. But this is an area where it
is
kind of nice.
I was just about to say that.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about this before with Mark on this podcast, but I think AI for learning is kind of dangerous because you might rely on that without putting in the work of like going through the struggle. But that's in the end how most developers I know at least learn by like, I have a problem, I need to figure out the solution. And if AI tells you the solution, you don't have that experience. You don't have that pain. And I think pain is a good motivator for learning.
Every high school gymnasium in the States, pain is weakness leaving the body. Whatever non-problematic version of that, we're saying that.
Okay, I'm now a little curious because, and for the record, you touched on AI, not me. Are there AI tools that you use in your workflow to keep up with? Like, because GitHub itself for like notifications and stuff is also kind of eh. But are there tools that you use that help you in your daily workflow?
Yeah, I've turned back on Copilot a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The last few years, ever since it was released, I would, every few months, turn it on, try it out, get annoyed at how it was net negative and turn it back off. And this time it's stuck. I think it's gotten good enough. I think my philosophy for using these things is that you should never let an AI make a decision. It's never a driver. It's a fetcher. You should not use it to explain the docs to you. You should use it to find the docs and then get to them. It can summarize, but it can't create. And then I treat it as, in my editor, just autocomplete. Like if I want to write an annoyingly long function or switch case or something, I will wait for Copilot that extra half second to fill it out for me.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of like this vibe coding mentality, to be super honest. I like to see AI as a tool in our tool world, as software developers to like assist us, make us more productive. And that includes things like, I have this massively big code base and I need to fix this bug. I have no idea where even to start for. Help me find the place. Generating software is, at the end of the day, still a very complex mechanism in itself. And having it completely auto-generated without having the fundamental understanding how things work, I think it's just a liability issue.
Yeah. I hear a lot of shades of, you know, when Stack Overflow and similar got popular of, you shouldn't lose the ability to learn or to seek, but this is a great tool in doing it. And eventually, I think that vibe coding, at least some variant of it, will become a reasonable thing to do once the AIs are much better than they are now. But currently, with the tools we are given, I do not trust the AI to write code that I would not just write myself.
I mean, I experiment with those kind of tools every so often. And I like that they show the diff where I can like go through and be like, okay, I would have done that too. That makes sense. This is utter garbage. Let's remove this. I do want to circle back because we're going close to the hour mark here. I want to circle back to open source for a minute. I want to take away like the technical aspect of open source and focus more on like the human side of it. Like, is there anything where you noticed personal growth within your journey? And I mean, you're doing OKR, so you have it very measurable.
You know, the third reason that I take on these old projects like Mocha and Yeoman is for the money.
I can see that.
Paid labor.
Kind of like the Cobalt developers that are now fucking rich.
Yeah. My Lamborghini comes from legacy software. it's valuable labor and someone should be doing it. And I am now one of those people. One of the personal growth areas, to answer the question, is I've gotten a lot better at valuing my time and myself. There's this hard balance between thinking too much of yourself and getting annoyed when people question you to assuming that you are a public servant for everyone and everything and not being comfortable making demands or telling people no or asking for money. That's been a big growth for me, I think.
Yeah, I think that's in a way really difficult to like balance that because at the one hand, you have a vision for the project in a way. So you need to tell people like, hey, it's open source. You can fork it if you have a different vision than what I have. But on the other hand, people are using it, people are relying on it. So you want to be like this kind of service organism in a way. That's interesting. Yeah. How did you find the balance there? Because this is nothing that you're like overnight, you get like an epiphany and be like, this is where I draw the line.
All of a sudden, all my emotional traumas and triggers are gone. No, it's a slow growth. A lot of people are nervous, myself included, to stand up for themselves because, you know, they've been rejected in the past or they don't want to make a fool. Like, I come in with a lot of imposter syndrome and I assume everyone else knows better. So, like, why would I say no to someone who's my better? Another thing is, and this is actually, I think, probably more relevant to a lot of listeners as well, conflict resolution or nonviolent communications. Someone is posting angrily on a GitHub issue. What do you do? How do you turn that into a positive learning / teaching moment? This is all kind of mixed together and, you know, being able to logically evaluate a potentially emotionally charged exchange where much context is lost and turn it into something positive.
I had similar learnings in my deferral role. I can empathize. Circling back to your Lamborghini, though, if there's anyone in the ecosystem that I would wish to have a Lamborghini, even though it's a stupid car, it's certainly you. Because, I mean, like, leaving, like, the comfortableness of, like, a fan company, Microsoft is not a fan company, but...
That always irritated me. Microsoft deserves to be in the acronym.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'll just put them in there, even though it's not in the acronym. But, I mean, it's a big stab. I assume you and your partner were somewhat concerned. I would at least. And you're doing great work for the community. So thank you very much for doing all that. And I would be happy for you to have a Lamborghini. I would highly advise for a different car because Lamborghinis are stupid. But
well, you know what? It's the internet meme. So
yeah,
Yeah, I'm not worried about the financial side of things for a few reasons. One is that I have good savings from my time at Microsoft. And then I actually told my manager that I had finalized my decision to leave Codecademy. I think it was 1 week before the announcement to the two of us went in that we were getting acquired. Very good monetary strategy on my part by accident. Another is that this is kind of an investment in me. That I have raised my profile, my knowledge, my reach, my abilities in coding. And when I do go back to industry, if and when, I'm going to have a much nicer paycheck as a result.
Yes, I very much hope so for you. And like one thing that I think honestly is criminally underrated on the open source side that is like often overlooked is the network that you build within that.
Yeah. You and I would never talk otherwise. Like,
wouldn't say that. You're a pretty nice guy.
Well, thanks. Well, just to be clear, we would not have been introduced is the correct way to say what I'm trying to say. Yeah. True. Like, I wouldn't have been able to go to conferences and do all this stuff if I wasn't, you know, talking about TypeScript and doing open source work. Like, that's just not something that would have happened.
Yeah.
We met at a conference and then we, like, walked your kid around the courtyard because, you know, we were just chatting and it was nice. Yeah. And now we're doing it again here.
Yeah. This was great. Thank you so much for joining me. As I said in the beginning, every time I talk to you, I feel more inspired. I love talking for you. You're such a scarily optimistic person. So again, thanks a lot for joining me today and see you next time. And hopefully we meet again at a conference. It's been a while since we met in person.
Yeah, we should make it happen. But yeah, no, thank you so much for letting me come on, rant about linting and promote my projects. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
Good. Glad. And with that said, thanks you everyone for joining today. See ya.